All right, I will say good morning. Good morning. Let us begin. Begin by thanking all of our sponsors for today, to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Adar, to thank Steve and Terry Zinn for dedicating all the Sherman Drushals this month in memory of Terry's father, Tzvi Hirsch ben Yosef HaKohen, to thank Paul and Kathy Pollack for dedicating the Shiurim and Drushals this month in memory of Paul's grandparents, Zecharia ben Zecharia and Dina Bas Pesach, to thank our Week of Learning sponsors, Avi and Vivian Zeisman, in connection of the eyesight of Avi's father, Michal Zeisman, Michal ben Yechiel, Zichrono Livracha. We open that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the Neshamos Lav and Aliyah, and the families in the Chalav. So I will say, let us begin. So we have a very interesting daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Nun 50, and we're actually picking up on the Mamish on the top of Nun Amidav. So I will say, remember again, left you in a little bit of a cliffhanger of a story. Remember again, the Gemara told us a story that Rabbi Meir passed away. Rabbi Meir passed away, and Rabbi Yehuda had issued one simple direction. What was his direction? No Talmidim of Rabbi Meir should be able to come into Mashir. Right? Why not? They're contrarians, right? They're difficult people. They're just difficult people. So what ended up happening? Sumchus managed to get his way into the shir. And what does Sumchus do for, you know, everyone knows, first day in the shir, you don't ask questions, right? By year, it's even whatever day in the shir, you don't ask questions, right? I was like, and again, but Lamaisa, Sumchus, on day number one, asks a question. And I will say, what was Sumchus's question? Sumchus decided to go ahead and relate his Rebbe, Rabbi Meir's version of the Mishnah. And what was Rabbi Meir's version of the Mishnah? So interestingly enough, Rabbi Meir's version of the Mishnah was actually the same version that we have. Namely, again, our Mishnah went through the various types of tumah, which if a nazir is exposed to those types of tumah, ultimately, again, he becomes tamei. And with all the resulting effects of ending his nazir, having to start again. So what did our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah said, on a mace and a kizayis min amace. Now, that was the version of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda's version just had kizayis min amis. Why? Because obviously, if it's kizayis, then if a whole mace also is going to be mitame. So Sumcha says this, and the truth is, in Rabbi Yehuda goes off the rails. Rabbi Yehuda goes off the rails, very upset, feeling that once again, Rabbi Meir's Tamidim are trying to stir trouble. So we'll say, so what happens over here? So top of Nun, I'm Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi says, Yomru, Meir Shachav, people are going to say, Meir died, Yehuda Kaas, Rabbi Yehuda got angry, Yosef Shasak, and Rabbi Yossi does nothing, Torah Matehe Aleha. So I will say, this is very profound. So first of all, I will say, I want to just spend a moment over here. Rabbi Meir, right? What's the pshat that Rabbi Meir had this reputation that his Talmidim were so difficult? So I'll say, there's an incredible Gemara Masechet Eruvin. The Gemara says that although Rabbi Meir is quoted many times throughout Shas, the halacha rarely follows Rabbi Meir. Why, says the Gemara? Because his statements were often not clearly understood by his fellow rabbinic colleagues. I'll say, Rabbi Meir was a person who was incredibly deep, incredibly profound, incredibly complex, and didn't necessarily operate on the same level as his same rabbinic peers. So I'll just point out to you, remember again, we know Rabbi Meir, right? How do we know Rabbi Meir most famously for? Rabbi Meir was with Elisha ben Avuya, right? So remember again, Rabbi Meir was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, and he was also a shtekel Talmud of Elisha ben Avuya. And remember again, when Elisha ben Avuya goes off the derech, everyone else leaves Elisha ben Avuya, except Rabbi Meir, right? Rabbi Meir was the one who kept on learning from Elisha ben Avuya and kept on trying to bring Elisha ben Avuya back. It's a machlokes. It's not clear in the end, was he successful in getting Elisha ben Avuya, who became known as Acher, to do tshuva or not? But the only reason I'm bringing this down to you is sometimes people, you see this, by the way, that Rabbi Meir obviously has a different neshama. And Rabbi Meir obviously has a different mahalich in life to be that kind of person who is able to see the good in everyone, to be the kind of person who is able to see the beauty in everyone, even in Elisha ben Avuya. It's a different kind of neshama. Sometimes the world doesn't understand special people. And sometimes the world just doesn't understand people who just, they operate on a different frequency. And I was saying, do you know that when the Rebbe, you know, I've heard of Lady Sibidishev, the Rebbe had a rabbinical position in the city of Pinsk. They hated Rebbe Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. They hated him. Not truly, they hated him because he was a chassid, right? They hated him to the point that one time Rebbe Yitzchak of Berdichev wasn't home for Shabbos. He went to visit his Rebbe. While he was gone, the Balabatim loaded up his wife, his kids, and all of his possessions on a wagon filled with manure and went ahead and literally dropped them off by the outskirts of town. So Rabbi Yitzchak comes down, which is a nice nuanced way of saying, right, you're not wanted here. You know, I would say, can you imagine, can you imagine doing that to anyone, right? Rabbi Yitzchak of Berdichev, the Rebbe. I say, sometimes the world just doesn't understand the holiest of the holy. It just doesn't understand who and what they are and how they operate and how it just doesn't understand that the world understands normal, regular people. It doesn't understand people who just are on a different type of wavelength. It could be that because of this, Rabbi Meir, and that's why again, the halacha often doesn't follow Rabbi Meir. He's quoted prolifically throughout Shas, but the halacha often doesn't follow him. Just a different kind of person. And it just could very well be that even in the style in which he taught his Talmidim was just a different kind of style. And so, again, it's not necessarily saying anything bad about his Talmidim, so you're not saying anything bad about the Rebbe, right, Rabbi Meir, but it was just different. It was just different to the point that, you know, they weren't able to really operate successfully in other settings, in any event. So now they have this whole blow-up. Rabbi Yossi sees this blow-up. He says, what's going to happen over here? Rabbi Meir is dead. Rabbi Yehuda's angry. And now what's going to happen? If I do nothing, this whole thing goes off rails, which I will say also another profound idea. And I will say, you know, sometimes in life we see things that are broken. And what do we do when we see broken things? What do we do? More often than not, what do we do? We say, oh, that's so sad. And then we just simply move on with our life. I will say, if you see something broken in life, it is your avoda to fix it. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, the Rabbi Zchusa Yagin Aleinu says that if the Ribbono Shel Olam allows you to see something that is broken, that is because he believes you have the ability some way, somehow, to fix it. If he didn't want you to do anything about it, he would not have put it within your ocular view. He would not have allowed you to see it. But if you see it, it means that you have an obligation to try to do something about it. So Rabbi Yossi says, Rabbi Meir is dead, Rabbi Yehuda is angry, let me try to see what I can do. So the Gemara says, Lo nitzucha ala lameis, shenalav kizayis basar. So I'll say, no, because remember, so now Rabbi Yossi says, Rabbi Yehuda, it is important for the Mishnah to say meis, even though it said kizayis minanis. Why? Because what does meis come to include? Even a corpse that does not have a kizayis of flesh on it. So even if you have a corpse that has so little flesh, it's less than a kizayis of flesh, an intact corpse will go ahead and convey tumah. But still you could say, al iver mimenu migaleach, al kulu kol shakein. But still it's redundant. Why is it redundant? Because we'll say, what did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah said, halacha l'maaseh, if you have an iver, if you have a limb from the corpse, that makes the nazir tame. So if a limb is going to make you tame, right, then obviously I'm going to say a corpse, even with just the kizayis of flesh, is also, or I should say, even less than the kizayis of flesh, is certainly going to make you tame. Ela kidam Rav Yochanan, lo nitzucha ela l'nefel shalon is kashu evarav begidim. Hachanami, b'nefel shalon is kashu evarav begidim. So it's actually very interesting. No, so I will say, so remember, just to be clear, what is Rabbi Yehuda trying to do over here? So I will say, Rabbi Yehuda is just trying to explain to us why we need the Mishnah to state a corpse, even though it says kizayis min ha-meis, right? Why does it have to say meis, even though it says kizayis gname. So Rabbi is trying to give all these different answers. Right? So maybe he's coming to include even a corpse that doesn't have a kizayis of flesh. Well, that doesn't really work because if you're saying an aver minameis, that's certainly, again, a corpse itself with less than a kizayis is going to be problematic. So maybe it means, so I said everything I'm suggesting, it means a nephel. It will say a nephel would literally be even like an embryo. Right? An embryo, a woman miscarries, and let's say she miscarries a fetus at a time where literally again shlon is kashu evarav. What kashu evarav means, where literally again the limbs are not held together by sinews. What it means is she's miscarrying a fetus even at a very early stage. Where let's say the limbs themselves have not become fully formed, even at that point in time, ultimately again such a fetus could convey Tumas Meis. So it's Kashu Evara Begidin. Literally, again, the limbs are not held together with sinews. So maybe I will say, so for Rabbi Huda is suggesting is, when the Mishnah says Meis, so again, Mishnah says Meis, that's what it's coming to include. Even a fetus at such an early stage where the limbs are not held together by sinews, that is going to convey Tumas Meis as well. To which the Gemara says, Rava Amar, Lo nitzricha ella l'rov binyano u'l'rov binyano she'ein bahen rovat samos. So I'll say ultimately again, Rava says it could come, Meis could come to include a situation where you have a corpse where the majority of the skeletal frame is intact or the majority of the bones are present, even though altogether there's less than a quarter kav of bones. Okay, so we'll say, so bottom line, what Rabbi Huda is coming to say is, Rabbi Huda, calm down. Don't get angry. There is a good reason to include both meis and kizayis min hameis in the Mishnah, and it's not redundant. Why not? Kizayis min hameis literally means, just as it's stated, a kizayis of a corpse. But meis could come to include all of these other cases that you would not necessarily have thought conveyed to Mas Meis. Either, again, halacha l'maisa case of where you have the majority of the skeletal frame or majority of the number of bones, but interestingly enough, it doesn't equal to a quarter kav of bones, or to a fetus that is underdeveloped where the limbs are not necessarily held together by sinews, or to a corpse itself which has less than a kizayis of flesh on it. All of these cases are novelty cases, be it halacha l'maisa, would still convey Tumas Meis. Okay, incredible. Let's go back there. Al Kizayis Meis, Al Kizayis Neitzal. So we'll say next case in the Mishnah was. Al Kizayis from a Meis or Kizayis Neitzal. Now we'll say, and I remember again, what's Neitzal? Neitzal is decomposing flesh that is in more like what we'll call a gel state. That's Netzel. So again, Gemara says, Ve'ezu, here it is. Ve'ezu Netzel. What's Netzel? What is Netzel? So the Gemara says, Basra Meis Shekarash. It refers to either flesh of the dead, right? Flesh that has decayed. Shekarash, you say, Karash also means congealed. Flesh that has congealed. Umoel Sheher Siach. So I'll say, Moel also means like, I don't want to use the word juices, but liquids, right? Liquids, ultimately, again, from the corpse sher siach. We'll say that bubble. Now, what is this referring to? Now, watch this. Hechi dami, what's the case? Ilema delo yadinan didehu. So we'll say, if we're talking about a case of liquids from the corpse, and I'm not sure, is this liquid? Now, we'll say, I just want to point out, not every liquid from a corpse goes in and conveys to a masmeis. For example, I will say, saliva from a corpse, mucus from a corpse. These things, again, not good. I mean, I guess in general, not good to come in contact with that. But right, but lamaisa does not convey tumas meis. So the Gemara says, so what's the case? Let's analyze. If we're talking about that you have a substance that emanated from a corpse, and you don't know, right? Delo yadinan didehu, and you don't know, is it from a corpse? Is it not from a corpse? So ki karash mayhavi, if it congeals, what? In other words, what does congealing have to do with anything? Ella, so I'll say, here's the case. Diadinan didehu. Rather, I'll say, the case is where I know, ultimately, again, that this is from a corpse. Afagav delo karash. So I'll say, if I know that it's from a corpse, then what? What does it matter if it did congeal or it didn't congeal. In other words, let's say what the Gemara is bothered by is it sounds like over here that what's Nezel? Basar Hames Shekarash. Right? Literally again, flesh from a corpse that congealed. As if congealing somehow is an important part of this process. But who cares if it's congealed or not? In other words, Ramanav Shach. If it's a part of the corpse, then it conveys Tumas Meis. If it's not part of the corpse, then what? It doesn't convey Tumas Meis. So what does it make a difference ultimately again if it's congealed or not congealed? So here we go. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Bistam I Karash Moalu, Lo Karash Dilma Kicha Veno. So we'll say, Rabbi Yirmiyah says, here's what it is. We'll say, sometimes you could have a substance that comes from a corpse and you're not sure. Is this basar hames or not? Is this flesh or not? So let's remember again, if it's flesh, then ultimately again it conveys tumas meis. If it's not flesh, so there, let's say some other bodily fluid, like mucus, like saliva, it doesn't convey tumas meis. So how do you know? So let's say the Gemara is a very simple litmus test. Ultimately, flesh congeals. Flesh congeals, other substances do not congeal. Okay, so we'll say so therefore again when the Gemara said before Ezu Netzel Basr Hames Shekarash, we'll say what that means is it doesn't have to be that it does congeal, but in general, if you are in doubt about the nature or identity of a particular substance, if it congeals, that's a good indication that it is Basr Hames. If it doesn't congeal, it's not Basr Hames. Okay, incredible. So by Minera by Meirabah. So we'll say this is this interesting question. So Abai asks from Rabbi the following Shaila. Yesh Netzel Behema, or Ein Netzel Behema. Ultimately, again, is there, right? Is there Netzel for a Behema or not? So we'll say, so the Shaila just is, does the din of congealed flesh apply to a Behema or not? They both say, now what's the Shaila over here? What's the Shaila? So we'll say, if you take a look at the Rush, I'm not even going to bother to tell you where it is on the page because we have different imaginations. Right? But I'll say, okay, but at least in mine, it's somewhere towards the bottom of the Rush. So Yesh Netzel Behema, Basar Nevela Sheni Muach, Mimitami Bemaga O Bemasa Olo. So we'll say, here's the Shaila. If you have flesh of a Nevela, so we'll say, and I remember again, Nevela conveys Tumah. Nevela is an animal that dies without proper shechita. That carcass conveys tumah. So we'll say, here's the shayla. If you have basar nevela, that ultimately, again, that nimuah, that dissolved, or that liquefied, ultimately, again, does that convey tumah by maga or masa or not? So we'll say, so again, just to be clear, if you go ahead and you touch or you carry the flesh of a nevela, you are tumah. The shayla now is, if that flesh decomposed to the point that now it's a congealed mass, we call that netzel. Does that convey tuma or not? So I'll say, let's analyze. So mi arminan, do we say, gemiri, netzel da asimi adam, aval da asimi behema lo, odilma loshna. So I'll say, here's the shayla. Now here's what's interesting. The Gemara seems to say that the concept that netzel, right, the concept that decomposed, congealed flesh of a person has the status of Tumas Meis, that is a halacha l'Moshe Mesinai. This is Gemiri. So do we say that same halacha l'Moshe Mesinai applies to Netzel of animals or not? That's the Shaila. So also let's analyze. Hanicha landamar Tumah Chamura ad Leger, the Tumah Kala ad Lekelev Shapir. So we'll say, let's define our terms a little bit more. Take a look at the Rush again. So we'll say some very important Rushes over here. So listen to this. Tumah Chamura, you see that Rush, he says, Tumas Nevela, Letame Adam V'Kelim. So we'll say, we're going to see that Tumas Nevela, under normal circumstances, when you have a Nevela, right? Stama carcass. Right? So a carcass of an animal that died without proper Shechita has the ability to convey Tumah both to people and to utensils. So we'll say, so Ad Leger, Ad Shetipasal Me'achilas Hager, Shenemar, Leger Asher B'Sharecha Titneno, V'Aru'uya Leger Kriya Nevela, V'Shein Ruya Leger Kriya Nevela. So we'll say, so listen to this. The Torah, when it talks about Nevela, says you can't eat it. So what can you do with a Nevela? Leger Asher B'Sharecha Titneno. Give it to the Ger. In other words, give it to the Ger means give it to your Gentile neighbor. Right? You give a Nevela to your Gentile neighbor. So we'll say, now listen to this. What we can extrapolate from that is only an animal that is fit for consumption by a ger is called an avela. Once it is no longer fit by consumption for a ger, it's no longer called an avela. So I'll say, what does that mean? Look at the next rush. I'm going to bring this together in just a moment. Tumakala, kolomar, levatla mitoras ochel, shintika b'sheres, lo tikaba achar shenifsa me'achilas hager, ad lekelev, kol zman sheru'i lekelev, toras ochel yeshala, u'mekabelas tuma, v'chein din kol ochel. So I'll say, now listen to this. In the realm of Nevela itself, there is a fundamental machlokes. What's fundamental machlokes? So we'll say, do we say that Nevela, actually, let's take a, go back, let's read inside the Gemara for just a moment. So honey chalaman damar, tuma chamura ad lager. So we'll say, by Nevela, perhaps we say, tuma chamura. Now we'll say, what's tuma chamura? The heightened form of Nevela applies as long as the Nevela is fit for consumption by a guy. So if a Gentile is permitted to eat the Nevela has the heightened form of Tumah. What's the heightened form of Tumah? That the Nevela ultimately, again, conveys Tumah both to Adam as well as to Kalim. As to Kalim. But perhaps once the Nevela is no longer fit for consumption by a person, but I both say it's still fit for consumption by who? By a dog. It has a lower form of Tumah. Right, so that's what it means over here. Tuma chamura ad lager, v'tuma kala ad lekelev. But a lower form of tuma applies to the nevela as long as it is fit for consumption by a dog, which we call roi lachilas kelev. So the Gemara says if we subscribe to that model, shapir. I will say, what's the shapir? Once again, to go take a look at the Rush. Shapir l'dide vada ein neitza lebehema tikvar nifsa. Me'achilas hager kisheni muach. So we'll say, now watch this. It's fascinating. So we'll say, when it comes to Hilchos Nevela, see if you adopt a model that says, as long as the Nevela is fit for consumption by the ger, then it conveys Tuma. What does it convey Tuma to? Adam and Kalim, people and utensils. Once it's no longer fit for human consumption, as long as it's still fit for canine consumption, right? Roi lachilas kelev, it still has tumah, but it's a lower form of tumah. So it's like, according to that approach, what we would say is, there is no netzel by an avela. Okay, we'll say, just follow this. We'll say, you know, sometimes when we hear tumah and tara, we'll say, what's our default? All right, wake me when it's over. So we'll say, no, we're actually going to understand this. This is actually very attainable. Right, so we'll say, so again, fact number one, Nevela conveys Tumah. Nevela conveys Tumah. What does it convey Tumah to? Adam and Kalim, right? People and utensils. That's called Tumah Chamura, highest form of Tumah. Now we'll say, the Shaila is now, up until what point in time, does Nevela convey that level of Tumah? So in model one, Nevela only conveys that Tumah as long as what? Roi lachilas adam. Fit for human consumption. Once it's no longer fit for human consumption, it's downgraded. It's still fit for what? Still fit for what? Lachilas kelev. But while it's fit lachilas kelev, ultimately again, it only conveys Tumah kala. Tumah kala essentially would mean that it would render food items unfit for consumption. That's tumah kala. Now we'll say, if you accept that framework, we would say, ein netzel lebehema. Now we'll say, remember again, why are we getting into all of this? What's our overarching question? Right? Our overarching question is there a concept of netzel by animals? Right? In other words, I know there's netzel by Adam. So if you have human flesh that decomposes to the point that it is a congealed mass, it still conveys tumas Adam. The Shaila is, does a congealed mass of animal flesh, of Nevela flesh, convey Tumas Nevela, right? Shabbos says, so according to this first model, the answer to that would be no. Because remember again, when do you have Netzel? Netzel occurs already past the point of human consumption. Once it's Netzel, it's no longer fit for Achilas Adam. Well, in model number one, if it's not fit for Achilas Adam, then what? Then what? It doesn't convey Tumah, or at least it doesn't convey Tumah Chamura. To which the Gemara says, Sahani Chalamanda Amar, I'm sorry. So, Hanichal Mandamar Tuma Chamura Adleger. The highest form of Tuma applies when it's fit for human consumption. The Tuma Kala Adlekelev Shapir. What's a Shapir means? There would be no Netzel by a Nevelo. Elamandamar Tuma Chamura Adlekelev. But there's another model. What's the other model? The other model is Alocha Lamaisa Nevela conveys Tuma Chamura, which means it conveys Tuma both to Adam and to Kelim, as long as what? As long as it is Ra'i Lachilas Kelev. What Rabbo say, is Netzel Ra'i Lachilas Kelev? Yes. Yes. Therefore, Rabbo say, according to this opinion, we would say, Yesh Netzel Lebehimo. So Rabbo say, so Michael and Imar, so let's analyze. So Tashma, Himchu Ba'ar Tameh, so Bachama Tar. Most interesting case. If you take a look actually at the Rush, so in mine it's the first white line of the Rush, he says, Imcho Ba'ar, Gabi Nevilas of Tar, Mitanya Imcheu Ba'ar Lashuman Shon Nevilas of Ba'ar Tame, Dadayin Ra'i La'adam. So let's listen to this. The Rush says this is talking about over here, you took Nevilas of, right? You took congealed Nevilas of. So you have a Nevila of a bird, you have congealed Nevilas of, and what do? You heat it up in the fire. So now it liquefies. Ultimately, again, it's tame. It's tame. Himcho, but and conversely, if you heat it up in the sun, it's tahar. Okay. V'sakadaitcha ad lekelev. Shabbos say, but if you hold that ultimately, again, that as long as nevela is fit, is roi lachilas kelev, that it still conveys tuma. See, even if you heat it up in the sun, it should still be problematic. Afilu b'chama nami. So to which the Gemara says, ema memachile. To which the Gemara says, no. Baser de isurach b'chama, kevan de isurach havele afar. It's different, Rabbi say. Why? It's different because halacha l'maisa, once you go ahead and you heat something up in the sun, Rabbi say, in general, if you're heating something up in the sun, when does it liquefy? It liquefies already after it became putrid. Once it becomes putrid, ultimately, you know, I'll say at that point, it's considered to be like afar, like afra ba'amah, right? Just like dust itself, and therefore it's no longer nevela. So we'll say, so we have not answered our question, right? So we'll say, so first I just want to point out, there's some riveting stuff going on over here. So we'll say, so again, remember, what's our overarching question, right? Let's go with the fact. What do we know? We'll say, it's always good to go with what you know in life. So what do I know? What's my guiding light? I know that netzel of a person conveys Torah. That's what I know. Right? So I know that if you have a congealed glob of human flesh, right, that conveys Tumas Meis. What's my Shaila? Yesh netzel b'nevela. Does an animal carcass, is there a din of netzel by a behema? So we'll say, so now what's my answer to that? I don't know. What I do know, however, is that there's a fascinating, riveting machlokes by nevela. What's fascinating about Machlokes by Nevela? What's the framework of Tumas Nevela? Do we say, model one, is that Tumas Nevela, or Nevela only conveys what we call Tuma Chamura, to Adam and Kalim, only when it's fit for human consumption, and then Tuma Kala, when it's fit for Achilas Kelev. Model two is that, no, Nevela goes ahead and has Tuma Chamura, as long as what? It's Ra'i L'Achilas Kelev. So again, what the resolution of that is, we'll have to see, and the implications of that for Netzel we'll have to see as well. We're not finished. Weiter, Tanan. Kala Nitzok Tar. So we'll say, this is another really interesting case. We'll say, what this means is as follows. This is, if you're pouring, to an Abosai. If you look at the Rush, this is towards the end of the Rush, look what he writes. Kala Nitzok Tar, Im Mashkim Torim, Vesoch Mashkim Temeim, Hal Yonim Torim, so let's listen to this. Imagine the following situation. Imagine you have a container of tar liquid, and you're pouring that container of tar liquid into tame liquid. So Rabbi say, the Gemara says over here, kolanitz of tar, that which remains in the upper container, the tar container, is tar. Now you're saying to yourself, yeah, shkayach. Rabbi say, so what's the interesting chiddush? Rabbi say, remember again, there is a connection between the tar liquids and the tummy liquids, right? What's the connection? The nitzuk, the stream. So the havamina is, I would have thought that the stream connects the tummy liquids to the tar liquids, and therefore makes the tar liquids tummy, Kamash malon, it does not. Kamash malon does not. However, chutz, there are exceptions to this rule. Chutz, midvash hazifim, vahatzapiches. And also with the exceptions of literally again, so zifim dvash, a special type of honey, zifim dvash, and sapiches. So we'll say, was it sapiches or tzapachas according to the Rush? He holds over here, we'll say, this was like a very thick porridge. A very thick porridge or a very thick pourable dough. So we'll say, this is interesting. So the idea over here is apparently these very thick items, do create the connection between the item that you are pouring from and the item that you are pouring to. They will say, isn't that incredible? Beishamai says, Av hamikveh shel grisin v'shel pur. Beishamai says, even if you are pouring, again, on both sides, mikveh is a porridge of split beans or whole beans. Mipnei shehi soledes la'achoreha. This is incredible. I will say, why? Because Beishamai will say, this is very interesting. When you pour these items, these type of porridge, so we'll say, what happens after you stop pouring them? We'll say, you see sometimes with thick items, right? When you're pouring a thick item and then you stop, we'll say, what happens to the stream when you stop at midstream? The I don't know what the technical term is, but the stream like bounces back into the upper container, right? You see, it's like even when you're pouring batter, right? You stop pouring the batter, what happens? The little bit of batter kind of, what's the technical term? All right, whatever. Jumps back or reverses course into the upper container. So I will say, so it's very interesting to see what's happening over here. So we have three halachas here. Halacha number one is that in general, a stream, right, when you're pouring tahar liquids into tame liquids, the stream does not connect the two items. Stream not connect to it, right? Tanakhama says, except if you have exceedingly thick item. For example, the Tanakhama's example was, so zifim dvash and sapachas. Sabachas, these items are so thick that they do create the connection. Beis Shammai seems to say, it dafker here also includes what? This porridge of split beans and whole beans. Why? Because these items, when you stop pouring them, the little bit that poured out of the upper vessel jumps back into the upper vessel, thereby making the entire contents of the upper vessel tameh. So we'll say, I'll just point out over here, even before we go on, we'll say, what do you see from here? And Carol Mr. Haskell, that sometimes being connected to something that is tame, even though you think you're in your own space, having a connection to tuma in any way has an impact upon you. See, I was saying, so sometimes in life we go through life and we assume that if we allow ourselves exposure to certain tame things, it's not going to hurt me. It's not going to hurt me. Why? Because my kli, my utensil is fine, right? My home life is fine, my personal life is fine, my ruchni is. So if I'm around the wrong people, or I allow a connection to some wrongful influences, it's not going to hurt me, because I'm safe and secure. I'll say, what do you see from here? That even a stream, any type of connection to tumah, has an impact on you. Just as they're both saying, sometimes that connection is inevitable, but it's at least important for us to be conscious and aware of this. Any type of connection, any type of stream that connects my tahar kli to a tumah kli, leaves a residual effect on who and what I am. Because most of you know what sometimes happens. Most of you know what sometimes happens in life. Sometimes if you're connected to the bottom tamekli, we'll say sometimes even when you disconnect, we'll say what happens? Some of the tumah comes back with you. That's just the nature of life. When you allow yourself exposure to tame things, some of the tumah comes back with you, right? Like the stream jerks back, so to speak, into your kli as well. And you end up taking things back into your home, into your life, without even realizing that they're following you back. It's incredible. So, Bayi Rai Rachama, Yesh Nitzuk La'Ochlin, O'ei Nitzuk La'Ochlin. So, as Rai Rachama said, ultimately, again, is there a connection, right? Yesh Nitzuk La'Ochlin. So, we'll say, if you take a look at the Rosh says, L'divrei Chachamim Kaboy. So, we'll say, see, as we're asking, according to the Chachamim, according to the first opinion, according to the Bryce over here, so I will say, do we say that a stream connects food items or not? So let's analyze this. Mi arminan, mishum de'is bohu riri, v'ani les bo riri, o dilma mishum de'smichin hu, v'hacha ha'smichin. So I will say, here's the shaila. They will say, the Chachamim, remember we have interesting machlokis b'sham b'sila, so the Chachamim in general say, that when you have a stream of tahar liquid or tahar food into Tomei food, that stream does not create the connection between the Tara foods or the Tara items and the Tomei items. So I will say, so yet Chacham came along and said, except for Zifim Dvash and Sapiches. So I will say, what is it that the Chacham were concerned about? Is it that they're concerned about thickness or they're concerned about Riri? I will say, Riri means literally again, Riri means strands that like that string back that spring back. That spring back. What is their concern about? To which the Gemara says, so do we say Mishum the Ispul Riri that these items have these strands, Fahani Laspul, and these items don't have it? O Dilma Mishum the smichin, or maybe because the food items are thick, Vahacha hu the smichin. So we'll say, you know what the Shaila is? We know that the Chacham are concerned about something, because they are actively articulated the Zifim Dvash and ultimately again the Tzapichis. So is it an issue of thickness or is it an issue of the strands that go ahead and spring back into the original, into the upper kli? Amar Rava, so let's analyze this. Amar Rava, Tashma, Chelev Hameis Shushali. So I'll say ultimately again, if you have Chelev from a mace, right, so congealed fat from a mace, Shushali, that is intact, V'ticho, and then it was melted, Tamei. Ultimately, again, it remains tummy. So Hayim Mefurat was in. Now watch this. If it was Mefurat, before it was scattered, V'tichol, and then you heated it up, Tar. Ultimately, again, it's Tar. Rabbi say, now, generally, the logic behind that would be, is as follows. If you hold it ultimately, again, pouring does not create a combined tumah. So the Gemara says, Shalem V'tichol Nami Litar. If you had something that was complete and then you heated it up, it should be tar. Now, both say, why should it be tar? Because the Pashas are both say, when you heated it up, what ended up happening? Some of it ended up scattering off, right? Because that's what happens when you heat something up. Something must have scattered off. I will say, take a quick look at Rashi now. V'saradaitcha nitzok la'ochlin ki hu shalim v'tichu b'machmas. If you had a shalim piece of chelev, and you heated it up, nami litar, kevan de megalgale mizavis zula zavis. So I'm going to say, what happens when you heat up a mass, let's say in a frying pan? So I'm going to say, what ends up happening? Ultimately, again, it ends up scattering in different parts of the pan. De kevan de megalgale mizavis zula zavis zu, nifrad ze mizeh, for the havi be kizayis bechunas. You won't have a kizayis. You won't have a kizayis. So again, if when you're heating up a mass in a frying pan, it's still going to be tamei. That's interesting because when you heat it up, you no longer have a concentrated share of the kezias. So if that's going to be tamei, then it must be that what? When you pour, there must be a connection as well. Because how are these two things related? Because heating it up in a frying pan would say, even things that are not together could still come together. So too, again, Abbas, that would tell you that even things that are being poured from one kli to another should also be reckoned as one kli as well. To which the Gemara says, "Ana bizer, no. Ana umar bre dravina tagamina hakam." Asking, what's the case here? Kigon de vahadi de mersachle salik amuda denura the pume de mana the karash the isakula gabe hadadi. Sebosai is very interesting. Sebosai, the Gemara says, Rabbi Zera says, no, what's the case, Sebosai? The case is where you took a congealed kizayis of chelev, and I will say, what ended up happening? You heated it up in the pan, it had such a strong reaction to it that what happened? The entire kizayis jumped out of the pan, and literally again adhered itself to a utensil. So that the entire kizayis congealed onto a utensil. Therefore, you have the entire requisite shear there. All right. I'm going to be on Ravashi. Tashma. Shabbosai. So again. What we have. Let's finish this. So Tashma. Beishamai Omrim. Af hamikvas shal grisin vishal pul. Mebnei shen soldin lacharein. Shabbosai. Ultimately, again. So Beishamai says. Beishamai included in the list of items. Even if you have a porridge of split beans or a porridge of whole beans. Ultimately, I'm going to say, if you're pouring that from one utensil to another, that pour does create a connection between the utensils. Why? Mifnishin soldin lacharein. Why? I'm going to say, ultimately, because when you stop pouring those items, the I don't know what the right term is, but we'll call it strands, right? The rerin, the strands, ultimately and spring back into the upper kli, to which the Gemara says, midi area, hasa mishum smichin, haka mishum riri. I will say, it could very well be that it's not necessarily the same thing. It could very well be that ultimately, again, what the Gemara is ultimately teaching us, Rabbi Say, is that halacha l'maisa, there are two different things that create connection through pouring. One could be if they are rearing, the strands that spring back into the upper utensil. Second possibility could be that what? Thickness of liquids also goes ahead and connects upper and lower utensils. So Rabbi Say, what we are left with over here is as follows. So I just want to point out, we still have a couple of open-ended questions. Let's work backwards. So we'll say, so now, question that we were dealing with over here is nitzok, which we'll say is a fascinating idea. If you're pouring tar liquids into tummy liquids, does the pour itself create the connection between upper and lower? And we'll say, it seems to be the answer to that is, if it's liquid, the answer seems to be no. Where we get into a little bit of an issue, I will say, is either where one of two things are happening. Either it's a thicker liquid, so that seems to be the Chamar saying if it's a very thick liquid, thickness could create connection between upper utensil and lower utensil. The other possibility I will say is rearin hachosrin. If you're pouring the they're a little bit more in the same because it's dafka rearin is dafka with thicker liquids. I will say, but again, that would be a type of liquid when you stop pouring it, the little bit of droplets or the stream jumps back into the upper utensil. It would seem to be again in those circumstances halacha lemaisa, it would create a connection. So we'll say how we pass halacha lemaisa on that, we'll have to see tomorrow. The other open ended question I will say is Yesh Netzah LeBehema, right? Or the Nevela, I should say. That we didn't resolve at all either. So I'll say, Miratz Hashem, the resolution to those two halachas, and Miratz Rabbosai in tomorrow's daf, Shkoyach.